每天上午6:30，晚上11:，与您准时相约。
大家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是 Larry。 我们的节目有一个官方 QQ 群了， QQ 群的号码是3317640，大家可以加入这个 QQ 群跟我们进行互动。今天我们还是来聊一聊 TED Talk， 我们请到的嘉宾是壮壮老师。
Hello, everybody. 今天虽然是这个 TED Talk， 但是其实和那个各种语言考试也是高度相关的。今天给大家这一段呢，我们会放两遍。The topic is the key insight about learning from mistakes. 曾经考过这个托福，考过一个作文，就是 Do you agree or disagree that people should learn from mistakes?
从小到大就有一个说法叫失败是成功之母，你要从错误中汲取教训，然后慢慢的进步。
没错。好，那这里边我就提，如果我提一个反例，有些错误你是能犯的，有些错误你是不能犯的，因为它可能就要人命关天了，是吧？比如说有些错误大夫要是开错了药，是不是啊？所以就说的话，这个就不能 learning from mistakes， 是不是？当然这个也是一个重大的惨重的教训，我相信就是如果真正有哪些大夫犯过这种错误，他真的是会记一辈子，是吧？还有比如说法官判错了人，对不对？这种 learning from mistake 我觉得就是代价太惨重了。
对，
所以呢不管怎么说，这是一个写作的时候容易考到的话题。那我们先听一遍啊，看看这里边的人有什么高见。
I have been teaching for a long time, and in doing so have acquired a body of knowledge about kids and learning that I really wish more people would understand about the potential of students. In 1931, my grandmother, bottom left for you guys over here, graduated from the 8th grade. She went to school to get the information because that's where the information lived. It was in the books, it was inside the teacher's head, and she needed to go there to get the information because that's how you learned.Fast forward a generation, this is the one-room schoolhouse, Oak Grove, where my father went to a one-room schoolhouse, and he again had to travel to the school to get the information from the teacher, store it in the only portable memory he has, which is inside his own head, and take it with him, because that is how information was being transported from teacher to student and then used in the world.When I was a kid, we had a set of encyclopedias at my house. It was purchased the year I was born, and it was extraordinary because I did not have to wait to go to the library to get to the information. The information was inside my house, and it was awesome. This was different than either generation had experienced before, and it changed the way I interacted with information, even at just a small level, but the information was closer to me. I could get access to it.In the time that passes between when I was a kid in high school and when I started teaching, we really see the advent of the internet. Right about the time that the internet gets going as an educational tool, I take off from Wisconsin and move to Kansas, small town Kansas, where I had an opportunity to teach in a lovely small town rural Kansas school district where I was teaching my favorite subject, American government.My first year, super gung-ho, going to teach American government, love the political system. Kids in the 12th grade, not exactly all that enthusiastic about the American government system. Year two, learned a few things, had to change my tactic, and I put in front of them an authentic experience that allowed them to learn for themselves. I didn't tell them what to do or how to do it. I posed a problem in front of them, which was to put on an election forum for their own community. They produced flyers, they called offices, they checked schedules, they were meeting with secretaries, they produced an election forum booklet for the entire town to learn more about their candidates. They invited everyone into the school for an evening of conversation about government and politics and, you know,whether or not the streets were done well, and really have this robust experiential learning. The older teachers, more experienced, looked at me and went, oh, there she is, that's so cute, she's trying to get that done. She doesn't know what she's in for. But I knew that the kids would show up, and I believed it, and I told them every week how what I expected out of them. And that night, all 90 kids, dressed appropriately, doing their job, owning it, I had to just sit and watch.It was theirs. It was experiential. It was authentic. It meant something to them, and they will step up. From Kansas, I moved on to lovely Arizona, where I taught in Flagstaff for a number of years, this time with middle school students. Luckily, I didn't have to teach them American government, could teach the more exciting topic of geography. And again, thrilled to learn. But what was interesting about this position I found myself in Arizona was I had this really extraordinarily eclectic group of kids to work with in a truly public school, and we got to have these moments where we would get these opportunities. And one opportunity was we got to go and meet Paul Rusesabagina, which is the gentleman that the movie Hotel Rwanda is based after, and he was going to speak at the high school next door to us. We could walk there. We didn't even have to pay for the buses. There was no expense cost. Perfect field trip. The problem then becomes, how do you take 7th and 8th graders to a talk about genocide and deal with the subject in a way that is responsible and respectful and they know what to do with it? And so we chose to look at Paul Rusesabagina as an example of a gentleman who singularly used his life to do something positive. I then challenged the kids to identify someone in their own life or in their own story or in their own world that they could identify that had done a similar thing. I asked them to produce a little movie about it. It's the first time we'd done this. Nobody really knew how to make these little movies on the computer. But they were into it. And I asked them to put their own voice over it. It was the most awesome moment of revelation that when you ask kids to use their own voice and ask them to speak for themselves, what they're willing to share. The last question of the assignment is, how do you plan to use your life to positively impact other people? The things that kids will say when you ask them and take the time to listen is extraordinary. Fast forward to Pennsylvania, where I find myself today. I teach at the Science Leadership Academy, which is a partnership school between the Franklin Institute and the School District of Philadelphia. We are a 9 through 12 public school, but we do school quite differently. I moved there primarily to be part of a learning environment that validated the way that I knew that kids learned and that really wanted to investigate what was possible when you were willing to kind of let go of some of the paradigms of the past, of information scarcity, when my grandmother was in school and when my father was in school and even when I was in school, into a moment where we have information surplus. And so what do you do when the information is all around you? Why do you have kids come to school if they no longer have to come there to get the information? In Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, we have a one-to-one laptop program. So the kids are bringing in laptops with them every day, taking them home, getting access to information. And here's the thing that you need to get comfortable with when you've given the tool to acquire information to students, is that you have to be comfortable with this idea of allowing kids to fail as part of the learning process. We deal right now in the educational landscape with an infatuation with the culture of one right answer that can be properly bubbled on the average multiple choice test, and I am here to share with you, it is not learning. That is the absolute wrong thing to ask. To tell kids to never be wrong, to ask them to always have the right answer, doesn't allow them to learn. So we did this project, and this is one of the artifacts of the project. I almost never show them off because of the issue of the idea of failure. My students produced these infographics as a result of a unit that we decided to do at the end of the year, responding to the oil spill. I asked them to take the examples that we were seeing of the infographics that existed, in a lot of mass media, and take a look at what were the interesting components of it, and produce one for themselves of a different man-made disaster from American history, and they had certain criteria to do it. They were a little uncomfortable with it because we'd never done this before and they didn't know exactly how to do it. They can talk, they are very smooth, and they can write very, very well. But asking them to communicate ideas in a different way was a little uncomfortable for them. But I gave them the room to just do the thing. Go create. Go figure it out. Let's see what we can do. And the student that persistently turns out the best visual product did not disappoint. This was done in like 2 or 3 days. And this is the work of the student that consistently did it. When I sat the students down, I said, who's got the best one? And they immediately went, there it is. Didn't read anything. There it is. And I said, well, what makes it great? And they're like, oh, the design's good, and he's using good color, and there's some, and they went through all, we processed out loud, and I said, go read it. And they're like, oh, that one wasn't so awesome. And then we went to another one. It didn't have good visuals, but had great information, and spent an hour talking about the learning process. Because it wasn't about whether or not it was perfect or whether or not it was what I could create. It asked them to create for themselves. And it allowed them to fail, process, learn from, and when we do another round of this in my class this year, they will do better this time. Because learning has to include an amount of failure, because failure is instructional in the process. There are a million pictures that I could click through here and had to choose carefully. This is one of my favorites, of students learning, of what learning can look like in a landscape where we let go of the idea that kids have to come to school to get the information, but instead ask them what they can do with it. Ask them really interesting questions. They will not disappoint. Ask them to go to places, to see things for themselves, to actually experience the learning, to play, to inquire. This is one of my favorite photos because this was taken on Tuesday when I asked the students to go to the polls. This is Robbie, and this was his first day of voting, and he wanted to share that with everybody and do that. But this is learning, too, because we asked them to go out into real spaces. The main point is that if we continue to look at education as if it's about coming to school to get the information and not about experiential learning, empowering student voice, and embracing failure, we're missing the mark. And everything that everybody is talking about today isn't possible if we keep having an educational system that does not value these qualities, because we won't get there with a standardized test, and we won't get there with a culture of one right answer. We know how to do this better, and it's time to do better.
好，听完了一遍，大家是不是听明白了呢？
好，这个 speaker shares three surprising things she has learned about teaching.啊，那所以之前呢我们就谈到了，除了你能让这个学生从错误中去学习的话呢，其实他还关于教课从老师的角度也是有启发的，其中就包括了呢 learning from mistakes。 那我们之前也谈到了 patience， 作为一个教育者
第一个重要的 quality 就是 patience， 要有耐心。
对，那其实这里边耐心呢，你是说要带着孩子一遍一遍念这种耐心，还是说你要允许这个学生他要去犯错误，给他这个犯错误的机会呢？
我觉得应该给大家一些机会。
对了，家长其实也是这样，但是你不见得就是看见这个好多的家长为了让孩子不要去所谓的跳火坑，然后他就使劲的去拦着，那最终这个学习这件事儿就是等于孩子去学习一个人生道理的学习方式，就不是说 learning from mistakes， 它是 learning by being forced by their parents。 那这里边呢就会用到一个词，就是你这个教育者哈，除了有学校的 teachers， 也当然包括这个 parents， 对吧？那为父母之道英文怎么说呢？就是 parent 当动词叫 parenting。那同样的道理呢，教育这里边一个重要的词就是 schooling， 也就是在学校接受教育，动名词 schooling。
Schooling and parenting。
对了，那其实好多的家长是这样，他就是生怕孩子犯错误，走了弯路，于是就使劲拦着。啊，这里边总是举一个例子，说你看在国外吧，西方教育小孩摔了跟头在那儿哭，大人根本就不去说我把你立马拎起来。但是中国的家长呢就会使劲扶着追着啊，你看那些老头老太太带着孙子的时候，哎呦千万别摔着啊，别磕着啊，别碰着啊，他就会这样，是吧？
对。
但是这一点呢后来呢也有心理学家争论了，就是在小孩摔倒他哭的时候，如果你不去抱他，这个小孩就会缺乏安全感，长大了以后他就会有人格缺陷和心理障碍。
嗯，
因为他觉得这个父母是吧，怎么关键时刻都不拉出来拉我一把，
那就很矛盾了，到底要拉还是不拉呢？
对，所以这是一个问题啊。所以这为什么这个考试这个作文就给你出这么一个让你两边公说公有理，婆说婆有理都能说出东西的话题。
所以在作文中我们两边都说一下，然后最后总结一下。
对了，所以呢大家就是为什么要让你 discuss， 对吧？好多的这个作文的要求是 discuss and then explain why
especially under some controversial topic。
对了，好，那所以呢就是要多听。那现在再回到另一个角度，如果说从教育者的角度来讲你要允许他犯错误，那从学习者的角度来讲呢，犯错误其实也并不可怕，对吧？所以你要 discuss 的时候你有好多的角度可以去 discuss。 好，那我们现在再把这个本身的这个内容倒是不难啊，我们就再听一遍。
好的。
I have been teaching for a long time, and in doing so have acquired a body of knowledge about kids and learning that I really wish more people would understand about the potential of students. In 1931, my grandmother, bottom left for you guys over here, graduated from the eighth grade. She went to school to get the information because that's where the information lived. It was in the books, it was inside the teacher's head, and she needed to go there to get the information because that's how you learned. Fast forward a generation. This is the one-room schoolhouse, Oak Grove, where my father went to a one-room schoolhouse, and he again had to travel to the school to get the information from the teacher, store it in the only portable memory he has, which is inside his own head, and take it with him, because that is how information was being transported from teacher to student and then used in the world. When I was a kid, we had a set of encyclopedias at my house. It was purchased the year I was born, and it was extraordinary because I did not have to wait to go to the library to get to the information. The information was inside my house, and it was awesome. This was different than either generation had experienced before, and it changed the way I interacted with information, even at just a small level, but the information was closer to me. I could get access to it. In the time that passes between when I was a kid in high school and when I started teaching, we really see the advent of the Internet. Right about the time that the Internet gets going as an educational tool, I take off from Wisconsin and move to Kansas, small town Kansas, where I had an opportunity to teach in a lovely small town rural Kansas school district where I was teaching my favorite subject, American government. My first year, super gung-ho, going to teach American government, love the political system. Kids in the 12th grade, not exactly all that enthusiastic about the American government system. Year two, learned a few things, had to change my tactic, and I put in front of them an authentic experience that allowed them to learn for themselves. I didn't tell them what to do or how to do it. I posed a problem in front of them, which was to put on an election forum for their own community. They produced flyers, they called offices, they checked schedules, they were meeting with secretaries, they produced an election forum booklet for the entire town to learn more about their candidates. They invited everyone into the school for an evening of conversation about government and politics and, you know, whether or not the streets were done well, and really have this robust experiential learning. The older teachers, more experienced, looked at me and went, oh, there she is. That's so cute. She's trying to get that done. She doesn't know what she's in for. But I knew that the kids would show up, and I believed it, and I told them every week how what I expected out of them. And that night, all 90 kids, dressed appropriately, doing their job, owning it, I had to just sit and watch. It was theirs. It was experiential. It was authentic. It meant something to them, and they will step up. From Kansas, I moved on to lovely Arizona, where I taught in Flagstaff for a number of years, this time with middle school students. Luckily, I didn't have to teach them American government. Could teach the more exciting topic of geography. And again, thrilled to learn. But what was interesting about this position I found myself in Arizona was I had this really extraordinarily eclectic group of kids to work with in a truly public school, and we got to have these moments where we would get these opportunities. And one opportunity was we got to go and meet Paul Rusesabagina, which is the gentleman that the movie Hotel Rwanda is based after, and he was going to speak at the high school next door to us. We could walk there. We didn't even have to pay for the buses. There was no expense cost. Perfect field trip. The problem then becomes, how do you take 7th and 8th graders to a talk about genocide and deal with the subject in a way that is responsible and respectful and they know what to do with it? And so we chose to look at Paul Rusesabagina as an example of a gentleman who singularly used his life to do something positive. I then challenged the kids to identify someone in their own life or in their own story or in their own world that they could identify that had done a similar thing. I asked them to produce a little movie about it. It's the first time we'd done this. Nobody really knew how to make these little movies on the computer. But they were into it. And I asked them to put their own voice over it. It was the most awesome moment of revelation that when you ask kids to use their own voice and ask them to speak for themselves, what they're willing to share. The last question of the assignment is, how do you plan to use your life to positively impact other people? The things that kids will say when you ask them and take the time to listen is extraordinary. Fast forward to Pennsylvania, where I find myself today. I teach at the Science Leadership Academy, which is a partnership school between the Franklin Institute and the School District of Philadelphia. We are a 9 through 12 public school, but we do school quite differently. I moved there primarily to be part of a learning environment that validated the way that I knew that kids learned and that really wanted to investigate what was possible when you were willing to kind of let go of some of the paradigms of the past, of information scarcity when my grandmother was in school and when my father was in school and even when I was in school, into a moment where we have information surplus. And so what do you do when the information is all around you? Why do you have kids come to school if they no longer have to come there to get the information? In Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, we have a one-to-one laptop program. So the kids are bringing in laptops with them every day, taking them home, getting access to information. And here's the thing that you need to get comfortable with when you've given the tool to acquire information to students, is that you have to be comfortable with this idea of allowing kids to fail as part of the learning process. We deal right now in the educational landscape with an infatuation with the culture of one right answer that can be properly bubbled on the average multiple choice test, and I am here to share with you, it is not learning. That is the absolute wrong thing to ask. To tell kids to never be wrong, to ask them to always have the right answer, doesn't allow them to learn. So we did this project, and this is one of the artifacts of the project. I almost never show them off because of the issue of the idea of failure. My students produced these infographics as a result of a unit that we decided to do at the end of the year, responding to the oil spill. I asked them to take the examples that we were seeing of the infographics that existed, in a lot of mass media, and take a look at what were the interesting components of it, and produce one for themselves of a different man-made disaster from American history, and they had certain criteria to do it. They were a little uncomfortable with it because we'd never done this before, and they didn't know exactly how to do it. They can talk, they are very smooth, and they can write very, very well, but asking them to communicate ideas in a different way was a little uncomfortable for them. But I gave them the room to just do the thing. Go create. Go figure it out. Let's see what we can do. And the student that persistently turns out the best visual product did not disappoint. This was done in like 2 or 3 days. And this is the work of the student that consistently did it. When I sat the students down, I said, who's got the best one? And they immediately went, there it is. Didn't read anything. There it is. And I said, well, what makes it great? And they're like, oh, the design's good, and he's using good color, and there's some energy, and they went through all, we processed out loud, and I said, go read it. And they're like, oh, that one wasn't so awesome. And then we went to another one. He didn't have good visuals, but had great information, and spent an hour talking about the learning process. Because it wasn't about whether or not it was perfect or whether or not it was what I could create. It asked them to create for themselves. And it allowed them to fail, process, learn from, and when we do another round of this in my class this year, they will do better this time. Because learning has to include an amount of failure, because failure is instructional in the process. There are a million pictures that I could click through here and had to choose carefully, this is one of my favorites, of students learning, of what learning can look like in a landscape where we let go of the idea that kids have to come to school to get the information, but instead ask them what they can do with it. Ask them really interesting questions. They will not disappoint. Ask them to go to places, to see things for themselves, to actually experience the learning, to play, to inquire. This is one of my favorite photos because this was taken on Tuesday when I asked the students to go to the polls. This is Robbie, and this was his first day of voting, and he wanted to share that with everybody and do that. But this is learning, too, because we ask them to go out into real spaces. The main point is that if we continue to look at education as if it's about coming to school to get the information and not about experiential learning, empowering student voice, and embracing failure, we're missing the mark. And everything that everybody is talking about today isn't possible if we keep having an educational system that does not value these qualities, because we won't get there with a standardized test, and we won't get there with a culture of one right answer. We know how to do this better, and it's time to do better.
好的，那希望今天的话题对大家有所启发和帮助。另外呢，如果你有任何关于英语学习的问题，都可以跟我们联系。我们的节目有一个 QQ 群的号码是3317640，大家可以加入这个 QQ 群跟我们进行互动。
好的，那咱们就这些吧。
好的，谢谢大家的收听，也谢谢壮壮老师的陪伴，我们下期节目再见。
再见。
Saw you from the distance. Touch my hand.